Welcome to Leadership Everywhere, the podcast on leadership in the 21st century. To ask questions and search for answers is a central aspect of our humanity. This is a creative act. In this podcast, I ask questions about leadership and explore them with you. By asking questions, I want to stimulate your imagination and create new images of leadership. This is episode 6, and we'll talk about the twin sister of leading, namely deciding. The Austrian satirist Karl Kraus once advised, "In case of doubt, decide for what's right." For what Karl Kraus only needed one sentence fills entire libraries, namely literature about decision-making. There is, of course, a good reason for this. The basic logic of deciding is to choose between two or more alternatives. If you decide for something, you decide at the same time against something. And that opens up the possibility of making the wrong decision. But you know that only afterwards. So I don't want to talk about what is the right decision, but how to get deciding right. That makes a big difference, if only because it takes away the pressure that every decision must be the right one. The fear of making the wrong decision can prevent or delay important decisions. And a central requirement for leaders is to decide. Deciding therefore means responsibility. At the same time, the way how decision-making and decisions are perceived is changing profoundly. We have almost unlimited access to a wealth of information and opinions, and commenting on decisions is virtually a national sport. Just think of the 8 million virologists in Austria. And in organizations, there are well-trained critical employees who no longer believe in hierarchies but think independently and want to participate in decision-making. And that offers great opportunities. Now, decisions are not all the same. The range of decisions extends from swift operational decisions, for example, in a crisis, to complex strategic decisions. Since these decisions take place in very different contexts, they require different approaches and have different processes. To understand this is half the battle. Here is my first question. What does deciding mean to you? Who decides what in your organization? What do you decide yourself and how do you do it? Deciding in a corporate context is different from deciding for yourself personally. In a company, the decisions of many people intertwine and ideally result in a pattern that strengthens and advances the company. How well this works depends strongly on the decision-making culture. Is decision-making exclusively bound to a formal hierarchy, or do those closest to the problem get the opportunity to find their own solutions or to make independent decisions? Are those affected by the decision heard and involved? You all have probably experienced this. Someone takes a solitary decision, which is then implemented rather badly. Why? Decisions that are not well understood or simply ignore essential aspects encounter resistance during implementation. This can range from service by the book, in other words, more or less open sabotage, to simply resignation. The process of deciding can make a huge difference. Let's take a closer look at this. At the moment, there is a lot of decision-making in crisis mode. In crisis, time and uncertainty are of decisive importance. A manager who leads through a crisis with assertiveness and clear instructions can usually count on people following, especially if it's someone who is legitimized by competence and experience. I emphasize this because it doesn't necessarily have to be the hierarchical leadership, but those with the greatest credibility and professional competence. For example, organizations that have risk and compliance management systems predetermine who makes what decision and what occasion. Rapid, directive decision-making can therefore be very effective in certain situations. But even then, it's important to define and explain how and why the decision was made. Then the whole team or organization can understand the decision and become a learning organization. Is decision-making an innate talent, or can one learn it? What are the ingredients of decision-making? What influences decision-making? Do you also hear again and again that decisions are not made fast enough, not courageously enough, or not at all? And of course, the respective decision makers are to blame for this. But it's wrong to believe that some people are inherently better decision makers than others. Deciding can be trained. Essentially, there are three factors involved. First, the facts. Second, the process. And third, the human factor. Let's start with the facts. The most important question is, what exactly should be decided? This is closely related to what we want to achieve with the decision. For example, which problem should be solved, or to which goal should this decision contribute? There must be clarity about this. Then you can see what data and facts are available and what data and facts you need and what remains open. Maybe it happens to you sometimes that it's not quite clear what needs to be decided, or that everyone gets tangled up in the discussion and no one has an overview anymore. In such a situation, there are a few helpful questions. For example, what exactly is our common job here? Our common goal? In which bigger picture should our decision fit? If your organization has well-formulated and well-established values, these are the ultimate signposts for a decision. Amazon is a prime example of this. The highest value, the top principle at Amazon, is customer obsession. Every decision starts with the customer and works backwards. The second point I mentioned is the process of deciding. Who is involved? Who contributes what? What roles are there in the process? How does the decision come about? It is worth developing, agreeing, and practicing this process and the appropriate decision-making rules together with your team. After all, a good process offers all participants the opportunity to get involved and grow. This considerably increases the chances of having the decision well implemented. Identification with the business also grows with influence and participation. This applies to a major change process as well as to the project of your department. If you want to delve more into decision-making processes, I have some literature recommendations for you in the show notes. The third factor is the human being. Whenever people come together, the concentration of energy and creativity can solve even the most difficult issues. But there are also sensitivities, ambitions, rivalries, in short, all kinds of disruptions. Disturbances bind energy between team members. And when power struggles are involved, it's often about blocking rather than deciding. What can you do? Let's look at it positively. Conflicts can point to important issues, and this is good for the decision-making process. As Winston Churchill said, never waste a good crisis. Conflicts about content can be very beneficial. They shed light on a topic from different sides, give different impulses, and new perspectives can develop from them. It becomes more difficult when personal conflicts are involved, and in reality, the personal level often overlaps with the content level. You have probably all experienced this, and we experience it again and again. The art of leadership is to encourage conflicts in content, to allow criticism, but to keep personal rivalries as small as possible. If you are involved in the conflict yourself, you can do something for yourself, namely self-reflection. To what extent does your own state of mind affect what is to be decided? Often a change of perspective and other coaching techniques help you to come to terms with yourself and to find a balanced path in the process. If necessary, get competent support. It will help you to put the conflict in perspective. And your example also enables others in the team to find a constructive approach. The better a team can deal with conflicts, the better the decisions will be. Which techniques and tools can help in the decision-making process? What experience have you had with them? And what role does intuition play? There are, of course, countless techniques and decision-making tools. You probably also know several, and you can find literature about them everywhere. So I don't want to go into this in detail, but I would like to introduce you to one approach that I know well, that I use myself in coaching, and that ideally integrates the human aspect into the decision-making process. And it perfectly fits the Leadership Everywhere principles. The original idea came from Walt Disney, and he used the method to get even fantasy projects, controversial ones, off the ground. You can adapt the method very well to decision-making processes and combine it with other techniques. It's only important to understand the basic idea. This basic idea is that good decisions are the result of combining different perspectives, and you can get there by assigning different roles to your team. Imagine the following. Someone comes up with a new idea, e.g. a new project, an IT solution, a cost reduction process, or something similar. There are basically two dangers in the decision-making process. One is group bias. Your team thinks very similarly, is quickly confident, and overlooks important factors. Or the second option. The idea does not meet with approval everywhere. Doubters and skeptics appear, and the discussion quickly drives towards a deadlock. Decisions become difficult. Think about what would happen if you defined different roles in the team. An idea champion, for example. The task of this role is to present the project, explaining its advantages, what problems it will solve, and what it will bring to the company as a whole. She can concentrate entirely on the idea without examining its feasibility. Someone else, or several from the group, get the role of the implementers. Their task is to make suggestions for realization of the idea without judging it. How could it work? What does it take to make it work? This person or group concentrates entirely on the implementation of the idea. Now the third role comes into play, that of the challenger, or the critic, or the devil's advocate, whatever they want to call the role. Their task is to check the proposals of the implementers to detect and make visible possible obstacles, hurdles, and the like. This can also be a stress test. Put yourself in the future and assume that the decision has gone completely wrong. How could this happen? What had to occur for this to happen? The point is that the distribution of roles legitimizes each group for different tasks. This directs the discussion towards a factual one, considering all aspects. Everyone is focused on fulfilling their respective role. Personal sensitivities or group thinking are neutralized. And best of all, you can do this with the same people in all three roles. Put on different hats or rotate places. Something that signals the change of role and perspective. And one more tip. When deciding at the end, make sure to explicitly state which arguments were not considered for the decision. Decisions often need to be readjusted, and then you can revisit these arguments. My last point. I'm often asked, should you listen to your intuition when making decisions? The head or guts dilemma. Of course, many decisions simply don't have all the information. There are too many unknowns, and very brainy people can find it difficult to make decisions under such uncertain circumstances. In the decision-making process, it's also absolutely necessary to point out factors that are not known, just to have that on the radar. Personally, I'm one of those people who decide quickly and intuitively. I have always struggled with it, because it is both a blessing and a curse. Blessing, because things can be moved forward quickly and dynamics are created. Curse, because a better result could be achieved with careful examination and more time. So I have a pretty clear opinion about the head or guts dilemma. The bottom line is that even an intuitive decision must stand the test of rational scrutiny. You can also say it like this. Intuition is what remains after the head has done the work. When the weighing of advantages and disadvantages no longer gets you anywhere. Intuition is the emotional memory, the feeling, and in a rational deadlock it can very well point in the right direction. Give it a try. Dear listeners, this is the first episode in 2021, and I wish you a brilliant new year with lots of good decisions. We are all ready for a fresh start. 2020, the corona year, is behind us. You hear from me again in 2 weeks with a fresh topic on leadership everywhere. I'm looking forward to your suggestions, feedback, objections, and questions. You will find further information and my contact details in the show notes. My articles, blog posts, and tips can be found on my website www.abado-coaching.com. And now a bon mot to take with you into the new year. Only who decides exists. Martin Luther. Keep well and stay tuned. Yours, Gabriela Abado.